In a Quiet Little Bar on the Coast by George Stinson, produced by Tidurigawa Bookmakers at tidurigawabookmakers.podbean.com. I'm sitting in this quiet little bar out on the coast. It's a small bar, not a lot of walking customers, you know what I mean. On the ocean side of a two-laner wandering up the shoreline. The building, low and fat against the wind, waves and rain, sits stubborn-like. A few local working people hanging around after their shifts, a man who says he's retired, nursing a beer for 20 years, and a couple of working ladies. Josh, the bartender, likes it quiet. Loud bars attract too many nosy policemen, and Josh, well, he's had enough of the police for one lifetime. Anyway, it's not a busy place, right? Then, about noon, this guy walks in, plunks a well-traveled suitcase on the counter, and orders a beer. Cold, he says, like he's had warm beers in places like this before. He sniffs, looks around, sniffs again, and finally blows his nose on a stained handkerchief while looking at Magda, the older working lady. "Damn busy day today, you know," he says as he gives me the once-over. "Damn busy." He pats his suitcase and picks up his beer. He downs about half the beer in one gulp like it was the last beer on earth, and then smacks his lips. "Damn good," he says. He pats his suitcase again and takes a smaller sip of his beer. "Busy day, huh? You a salesman or something?" Joss asks, more for Magda's benefit than his own. He knows she's sizing the guy up, wondering if he's the paying kind, and if he is, how much, for what, and for how long. "Me? Salesman? Nah," the guy says. He rat-a-tat-tats his fingers on the counter, then slaps his palms down. "I have not been, nor will I ever be, a salesman." He smiles at me and Josh. That's a paraphrase of the great U.S. President Lyndon Baines Johnson, by the way. A paraphrase. "Who?" Magda asks. The guy turns around on his stool and looks at her as if seeing her for the first time. Does the quick glance over, and I can tell he's figured out her occupation. He smiles at her. He smiles a lot, this guy. "Johnson, Lyndon Baines, president of the U.S. of A. after Kennedy and before Richard Milhouse the Nixon, November 1963 to 1968. Johnson, not the Richard. "What are you paraphrasing?" I ask. "Pardon?" "You said you were paraphrasing that guy Johnson. What are you paraphrasing?" "Ah, yes." The guy sips his beer and wipes the foam off his lips with his sleeve, which, I see, is a little worse for wear. "How old are you, son?" 33. Like Jesus at his shootout at the Crucifix Corral. "But too young to remember LB the Jenny, then, aren't you?" He presses his palms together and rests one elbow on his suitcase. "Wasn't he the one who said, 'I am not a crook,'" Magda says. "That was Richard the Milhouse Nixon. California man, by the way, through and through," the guy says. "Like the Wilson boys." We all look at him and wait for him to tell us who the Wilson boys are, or were. "The Beach Boys." We all stare at him for a second. He's a walking ancient history textbook, it seems. "Rock, not pop, a rock group of sorts," he smiles. "From the 60s, mostly. Leader went insane, of course. As did Richard the Milhouse." He looks at his beer, he looks up at Josh. It could be argued, I mean. "So, how come you're having a busy day?" I ask. "My profession keeps me busy, sir. My profession." He finishes his beer and waves the empty glass at Josh, who gets him another one. The guy gulps down a third of it. "What do you do?" "I sell," he starts. "You said you weren't a salesman," Josh interrupts. He's leaning on the counter near the guy's suitcase. "Ah, back to Lyndon B.J., eh?" The guy scoots his suitcase closer to himself, away from Josh, until he's almost hugging it. "Let me inform you all of what our late president once said. He said," Johnson did, "I will not now, nor will I ever, send American boys to fight on foreign soil." The guy looks at us and waits. We stare at him. At almost the same time, we shrug our shoulders. The man then proceeded to send 500,000 boys to Vietnam, he says, and sips his beer, to fight on foreign soil. He points his finger at Magda. Bang, bang. Magda gets up from her chair and joins us at the bar. She sits close to the guy and says, I remember that war. My dad told me about it. He said the whole thing was like a huge party. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Put a nice smile on sex. That, the guy said, was over here. Over there, in Vietnam, it was more like sex, drugs, and death. The point being here, ladies and gentlemen, the point being LBJ lied, you see. And you lied when you said you weren't a salesman, I say. We have a winner. Line up a beer for that man, will you? So, what do you sell? I ask. Enchantment. You selling drugs? You get out now, Josh bellows. He starts leaning over the guy. He pays off a couple of cops to look the other way, but he doesn't put his bar on the line for a stranger. Drugs? Never. I am not a drug dealer, the guy says. Then he quickly adds, unlike Dick and Lyndon, I am also not a liar. Josh reaches for the suitcase. In this case, in the case of drugs. No, not me. No drugs, no sir, honest. Josh backs down, but he frowns at the guy. He moves down the counter to where he keeps the baseball bat. He nods his head at the suitcase. Let's see what you're selling, he says. It's a threat. Ah, well, the guy says and pats the suitcase. The handle looks like it'll fall off any second. Therein lies a slight problem, sir. You see, if I open this suitcase, you'll all want what I got, and I ain't got enough for everyone. Someone's talking like a lion salesman, Josh mumbles. Open the damn suitcase. Like I said, it's been a busy day today, you know? Magda puts her hand on the guy's thigh and smiles and asks, how much you need to let us see what you're selling? Your immortal soul, the guy says, and he's serious. Damn Bible salesman, Josh says. He grabs a dirty cloth and starts wiping down the counter. The guy watches him for a moment and then turns to me. You're 33. What have you been doing for the last 13 years? He looks serious. He's holding his suitcase in both arms. Magda has her hand on his thigh, but he doesn't seem to notice. Since I was 20? I don't know, I start. Working, I guess, most of the time. Been working as a cabinet maker now for about 10 years. Traveled around a bit. Traveled? Where? Spent a couple of days camping out in South Dakota, the Badlands. Did some hiking in the desert in New Mexico, Montana. Even got down to the Yucatan once. Well, what's in this suitcase, it can send you anywhere you want. Anywhere. I look at him like he's crazy, because, face it, unless he's got himself a bag of gold in that damn beat-up suitcase of his, I ain't going anywhere, no place and nowhere. The guy must be reading my thoughts, because he clicks open one of the rusty snaps on the suitcase and opens it a fraction of an inch. He looks inside like he's making sure whatever he's got is still in there. How about another beer, he says to Josh, but doesn't take his eyes off whatever is in his suitcase. Josh stops wiping the counter. He picks up a glass and starts wiping it with the same dirty cloth, just like in the movies, but with Josh, it looks natural. I haven't seen any of your money yet, mister. Coins of the realm, coins of the realm, the guy mumbles as he shoves his hand in his pocket. He sprinkles about 40 half dollars on the bar like he was spreading gold pieces. He smiles at Josh, then looks at me. Anywhere, he says. Neither Josh, Magda, nor I say anything. We just look at him like maybe he's escaped from the state mental farm. He stares back, mainly at me. Care for a sample, he says, and pushes his suitcase towards me. He lifts the lid a little bit and gestures for me to move closer. I scoot a bit. Look inside, carefully. I bend over and peek inside. I see a swirl of, I don't know how to describe it, light? Blue light with wisps of gray smoke or sand circling around? It looks like a blue hurricane if you could see it from above, from space. Except it's moving really slow. In the eye of the hurricane, I can see, just barely, a white light. Or maybe it's the bottom of his suitcase. This is weird, I said, mostly to myself. I pull back from the suitcase and look up. This is... I'm alone. No salesman, no Josh, no Magda, No quiet little bar on the coast. And I'm not in Kansas anymore either, Toto. The suitcase is at my feet, and I'm on a white beach that stretches out to a huge dark rock stuck in the ocean. I turn around. The beach disappears around a corner. The ocean is flat, and judging from the position of the sun, it's around 2 p.m. I need to find out where I am. What's going on? I'm lost and alone. I can't swim the ocean. So I head up inland, into the jungle growth, taking the suitcase with me. About 10 steps into the jungle, I see a church. Cheaply made, I can tell, even from a distance. Its steeple is leaning dangerously left. The church needs paint and a new door. Weeds and vines grow in and out of the windows. But since it's the only building around, I look inside. The inside is as bad as the outside. Toppled over pews and a burnt interior. There are scars of gunshots on the walls. The crucifix is tilted and Christ looks charred, as if he's been through a fire. The place is abandoned, so I turn to go outside when I hear a whimper. I look around the building. I don't see anyone. I lean a little left and a little right, sort of to look around without moving, but I still don't see anyone. Maybe, I think to myself, it was just an animal. Take a step towards the door when I hear the same cry. I think about running back to the beach and leave this animal, whatever they are, to themselves. Burned out churches with bullet holes in the walls don't naturally lend themselves to good thoughts about the natives. But then I think, what if it's a child? So I take a few steps around the back of the church. When I don't see anything, I figure I'm going to have to look under all the pews. I don't want to. This place is giving me the creeps. But I start looking. I don't find anything. Now I'm more irritated than scared. I find a side door and head toward it. Again, I hear a whimper. What? I shout. Where are you?
Help me.
It's a woman's voice. Where are you?
Here.
I look up. On the crucifix, where I saw Jesus, is an Asian woman, dressed in pure white with blood dribbling down from the palms of her hand onto her dress. Jesus, I mumble. I scramble up to this crucifix. You okay?
No, please help me down.
I stack a few pews up and clamber up. She's got a couple of 6-inch finishing nails pounded through the palms of her hands. I touch one and she winces in pain, but she doesn't cry out. If I take these out, it's going to hurt really bad, I say.
It hurts now too. Please help.
I find a cracked candlestick holder I can use as a crowbar and climb back up to the woman. I put the metal under a nail and start to press down. If this hurts too much, let me know. She looks at me like I'm an idiot. Of course, I think to myself, she'll let me know. She'll scream like a banshee. I'll try to be quick. Ready? Okay? On three. I push a little bit on the metal. One. I slam the candlestick against her palm. She screams and faints. The nail pops out of her palm and shoots across the church. Her arm falls from the cross and I barely catch her. Idiot, I say to myself. She's nailed to the cross by one hand and I can't hold her up forever. As best I can, I work the candlestick under the other nail. It's hard to hold on to the woman and pry the nail out at the same time, but she's out cold. This is my best chance. I yank on the metal. The woman wakes up long enough to scream. Then she faints again. The nail splutters against a nearby pew. Now nothing is holding the woman up but me, and I can't hold her anymore. We both crash to the floor. I smack my head on something hard. The next thing I know, my hands are screaming in pain like they're on fire. My arms are numb, and I can't move either of them. I'm looking down at the Asian woman. She's got white bandages wrapped around her hands, and a tiara made of emeralds and gold on her head. Her hands are clasped in front of her like she's praying. Only she's not praying. She's looking at me, and I'm nailed to the cross.
You saved my life, she says,
and looks toward the door.
Or maybe not.
Help me, please, get me down from here.
I was hoping,
the woman said,
I was hoping I could end it.
We both hear a loud shout and then gunfire.
If I had stayed up there, if I could have taken on the sins of my country.
Please, hurry, get me down.
I can't, I'm sorry.
She hurries to the broken door. A bullet screams past her head and takes a chip out of the wall. Wait, wait!
You saved me, but not my people. If I had died...
Like 100 weapons open fire, and her words are drowned out. The last thing I see of her is a glint of green from the emeralds in her tiara as she disappears into the glaring light of the jungle. Then I hear the rumbling of a tank, and the cross begins to shake. It sways back and forth, first a few inches, and then more and more. The tank rattles past the door. A dozen men in camouflage scramble by. Two men with big guns jump into the church. They look around, pointing their rifles at everything, and rush out. Gunfire greets their return, and one collapses with a grunt, a splatter of blood where his head used to be. Neither looks up at the cross, at me. The right wall of the church suddenly cracks open, and the cross topples forward. I'm heading straight for the aisle. I'm going to be crushed by a crucifix. The floor, it's coming up fast. I can hear shooting. If I survive, I know I'll be shot to pieces. I see ants on the floor. The crucifix hits. I pass out. I wake up with huge holes in the palms of both hands. The arms of the cross landed on the upturned pews, but the force of my weight ripped my hands right over the nails. The pain is like being on fire. I see the suitcase in front of me and hope I can find something in it to stop the pain. I pop it open. Inside is nothing. It's a tattered old empty suitcase. I look up. I see a bartender staring at me. I look right. A couple of hookers. Straight in front of me is a man in his early 30s, nursing a beer, and it's only shortly after noon. A beer, I say to the bartender. Cold. I've been in places like this before. I know warm beer when I see it. I blow my nose and check out the ladies. One, the older one, looks particularly appetizing. Damn busy day today, you know, I say and check out the other guy at the bar. Damn busy. Then I take a big gulp of my beer, happy to be alive. Happy not to be in an abandoned church surrounded by jungle and killing. Damn good. Busy day, huh? The bartender asks me. You a salesman or something? I am what I am, I say. So, what do you sell? The young guy at the bar asks me. Enchantment. Thank you for listening to In a Quiet Little Bar on the Coast by George Stenson, published by Tedorigawa Bookmakers at tedorigawabookmakers.podbean.com. Hope to see you again soon.